from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Our numero dos of the Rob Brown radio program goes now. This is the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo with you. It is spectacular to have you here on a Friday morning. Ever so grateful to you for allowing us to be a part of your day. Let me tell you that I sincerely mean that, my dudes and my dudettes. We've got a lot.
Aw.
I know. I'm a sweetheart, if we're being honest. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot to get to on the show today. 8:40, Rashad Beard of the Panther Nation podcast joins us. Ordinarily on Thursdays, he was booked up yesterday. International man of mystery. Could not make it. But he will join us today at 8:40, where we will discuss all things Carolina Panthers. Looking forward to that.
I'm sure he was successful with his endeavors, whatever they may have been.
Can't tell us what it is.
Right.
But yes.
Like a watch and a pin were involved, and possibly a fast car.
We're looking forward to that. With an ejector button, obviously.
Well, yeah.
Can't have an Aston Martin without an ejection seat. James Bond jokes. Let's get to, well, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. You're less than an hour away from having to work. When you get to work, let's call it what it is. You know what's going to happen. You're gonna respond to those passive-aggressive emails the boss sent you last night. He's like, it's only 9:45. I expect you to be working right now. And you're going to go, sorry, boss. My kid was sick or whatever.
Yeah, I've got those emails before, so yeah.
I mean, I get them, and I'm like, absolutely happy to do it. All right? But you I mean,
followed by texts, you know, and then possibly a knock on the door.
You're gonna respond to those. And you're gonna respond to those in that traditional, like, smiley face emoji kind of way, you know? You know how when an emoji means the opposite of what it's supposed to mean when you send it? That kind of way.
I still have never sent one. I'm pretty proud of that.
Why are you proud of it?
Because I'm abstaining.
Why?
Because I want to be a rebel.
Why are you anti-a-no? Right, but you're being a rebel just for the sake of being a rebel. You're not standing on principle. You're not anti-emoji.
My principle is yeah, maybe I am anti-emoji.
Yeah, you are.
Possibly.
Oh, anti-emoji?
I might be.
You're not anti-emoji.
I might be.
No one's anti-emoji.
Well, then I'm the first.
Again, being a rebel for the sake of being a rebel. All right, whatever. Send an emoji and watch how much better your life is.
Not going to.
Like 90% of my communication is done via GIF or emoji, all right? I was anti-emoji for a while.
Never sent a GIF either.
All right, not sending GIFs is a hill I will actively charge up against you. GIFs are amazing.
I don't need pictures or videos to explain what I'm saying, because I am so colorful with how I write things that it's funny without needing all that.
Eye roll emoji.
Entertaining. All that kind of thing.
Face palm emoji. I'm going to just start saying the emoji I would use out loud.
Wow. That's entertaining.
Dollar bill emoji.
Send it to me in my car, though, because I don't know if you've heard how certain AIs.
Does it read emoji to
you? Yes, it does. Those are awesome.
Happy face emoji.
Especially poop emoji. Poop emoji. Poop emoji.
Does it say poop?
Yes, it does.
That's supposed to be ice cream.
No, it does. It does.
It says poop emoji?
Yes.
Incredible.
My children send those to me while I'm in the car.
Yeah,
all,
you can go ahead and put me on that loop now. Every time. The one day a year where you leave the studio before me in the afternoons, I'm just going to hit you with every 5 minutes of poop emoji for the X amount of minutes it takes you to get home.
And I'll laugh the entire way.
Hey, it's now 7:04 in the morning. You are 55 and some change away from logging and responding to those emails, walking to the hall and grabbing Gloria. Gloria's in the entertainment department, all right? You're going to go grab Gloria. You'll be like, yo, Gloria.
G-L-O-R-I-A.
Gloria, let's sing that song about you.
Gloria. There's a lot of songs about Gloria.
Do you know any Glorias?
Yeah, I do.
Do you really?
One of my best friends growing up, his mom's Gloria.
Now, you know what? Now that I think about it, one of my friends' mom's name was Gloria, too. So I know one Gloria and one Pete. That's what we've determined today. You're going to go grab Gloria. You're going to walk down the hallway. You're going to go to that one spot in the break room where the boss can't, like, peek around the wall without making it obvious he's coming, and then you can switch the conversation to work. But you're gonna talk about sports. You're going to talk about baseball, football, soccer, basketball, whatever it is you might want to talk about. And if you're going to talk about those things, you need to know what's going on. And if you need to know what's going on, don't worry. Lonzo and I have you covered with this. That's the best one yet, man. It's the best one yet. Hit it! The water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports with your coworkers today. This is what you will be talking about. Let us begin with item number one. The NBA offseason half begun, ladies and gentlemen, and moves taking place around the league. We won't spend a ton of time on the little ones. Malik Monk is staying in Sacramento, a 4-year, $78 million deal with a player option on the last year. Malik Monk was the NBA Sixth Man of the Year runner-up this year, had a career-best season, averaged 15-5 throughout the year, does avoid free agency with the maximum deal available for him to stay in Sacramento. Wasn't the only move in terms of players last night, as a deal was struck between the Chicago Bulls and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The hustle monster, Alex Caruso, is being shipped to OKC. He gets Josh Giddey gets sent back to Chicago in return. The Bulls trading two-time all-defensive team guard Alex Caruso straight up for guard Josh Giddey. That one came through last night. Delivers the Thunder one of the league's most coveted role players. On the flip side, Josh Giddey has all-star potential, but because of the personnel setup with SGA breaking out last year, likely was never going to be able to achieve that in OKC. So, a spectacular role player in Alex Caruso sent to OKC, and now Josh Giddey may have some room along with Zach LaVine, if LaVine stays a Bull, to kind of reach his cap. That one happened last night as well. Pascal Siakam will be staying in Indiana. I thought he was going to be a very heavily coveted free agent, but Indiana gives him the max deal, a $189.5 million deal for 4 years to stay with the Sirs there in Indiana.
So bad.
It's so bad.
It is really, really bad.
The 30-year-old will sign the deal once the league's free agency moratorium ends on July 6th. But the big move that made the waves yesterday after being rejected by Dan Hurley, the Lakers have themselves a new head coach, a 4-year deal agreed to with J.J. Redick. The former Dookie turned 15-year NBA vet met with the Lakers over the weekend, spent time with both GM Rob Pelinka and owner Jeannie Buss over the weekend. That concluded with a Thursday late night offer of 4 years. Financial terms of the deal have not yet been disclosed.
If you're second or third guy on the list and you get a job, does that bother you?
Not when it's a job like head coach of the Lakers, right? Like if it turned out, and I don't know that it wasn't, if it turned out I was the second pick for this gig, I still would have jumped at it. Still would have been like, hell yeah. Second place, and I'll work my way up. And that's going to be J.J. Redick. Pelinka said he became sold on Redick's ability to connect with players and his basketball IQ. Believe surrounding Redick with an elite coaching staff of experienced veteran coaches will help shorten the learning curve into his first coaching job. The only reason this is interesting to me, I actually do not have a problem with J.J. Redick being a head coach. None at all. He is a very smart boy who has a basketball IQ. He knows ball, you might say.
So all those comparisons to Jeff Saturday you think are unwarranted?
It is not that Jeff Saturday doesn't know ball. It's that Jeff Saturday was just in over his damn head. And for the record, exactly what I was about to say about J.J. Redick. I have no issue with J.J. Redick becoming a coach. I just think J.J. Redick jumped headfirst into the deep end, right? Not just that he's become a head coach. If he became a head coach and kind of spent 2, 3, 4, 5 years cutting his teeth, as the old expression goes, at a lower level squad, that's one thing. My man's jumping headfirst into the Los Angeles Lakers, and more importantly, into an LA Lakers team who, let's call it what it is, the championship window is closing, not opening. They are closer to the end of this iteration of the Lakers than they are to the beginning. If this was the beginning of the Lakers, LeBron James years, I'd feel a lot better about it. But they're at the end of the LeBron James years. This is they're like a year left, maybe two max.
Are you sure? Because he hasn't signed a contract. Those years may be over.
They may already be over. That's exactly right. The LeBron James era. Now, I will say this. I am now convinced LeBron is re-signing with LA. Because, honestly, as much as I think J.J. Redick absolutely has a high potential coaching limit, he's a young guy. He can communicate with players. This is kind of the opposite of some of the other coaching hires that we have discussed in years gone by. He can connect with players. And I mean it when I say, if you've ever listened to any of the Redick pods, the guy knows ball. He can break down a basketball game with the best of them. I'm not against the hire. In fact, I think of all the hires that have been made of non-retread coaches in years gone by, this is the one I have the highest hopes for down the line. What I am saying is, this iteration of the Lakers, even if Bron stays, and I do think he's going to stay. This is LeBron's guy, right? Let's not get cooked on this one. J.J. Redick was considered from the beginning because him and Bronny are boys. They got their pod working together. That is why J.J. is here. J.J. Redick is not getting looked at by the Los Angeles Lakers if it wasn't a priority to keep LeBron James under any circumstances, no matter the condition, which is what the Lakers have outright said was the case. But hey, if it keeps Bron in the fold, you run the run, right? You run the run. You see what happens. Because Bron is valuable not just as a player, but as a figurehead, as a piece. If LeBron rejects and leaves this team, not only does the team's core fall apart, but they look even sillier than they do with Boston finally outpacing them in terms of titles. Let's get to item number two on the water cooler cheat sheet. I bounced around with what some of the other stories ought to be in this one. I will go with the little footy here. Copa America is underway, ladies and gentlemen. Copa America started last night. Turtlenecks are back, so we're influencers. We're influencers.
Yeah, that was, I noticed that right away. She was rocking that turtleneck, too.
The hockey folks on ESPN right now breaking down Game 6 of the Stanley Cup, which is tonight at 8 p.m. The hockey folks are breaking out the turtleneck. Zoe and I yesterday talked about the fact that turtlenecks should make a return, all right? I know it's weird, but I'm a big turtleneck guy, all right? But like Lonzo said yesterday, fat guys can't wear turtlenecks. It's not a fat guy-friendly clothing. Turtlenecks and vest. Can't wear them as fat guys.
All right, I disagree with the vest, but I will say it's not just fat guys. It's guys with really big necks.
I think you can get away with a big neck as long as it's not like...
No, because your neck goes right into... I know this. Your neck goes right into your chin. So, I mean, you wipe the beard away, and it's just like nose, then neck. So, I mean, no.
Copa America took off last night. Leo Messi and his Argentinian squad get a win over Team Canada. 2-0 was your final, live from Atlanta, Georgia. Now, I bring this up not because I think that the 2-0 win is worth talking about. I bring it up because I do think this tournament is massively important for the United States of America. You were hosting the thing. Okay, it's in the U.S. It's being played it's an international tournament, but it's being played nationally across the entire country. It is being played in California. It is being played in Arrowhead Stadium. and is being played in Jarrah World. It's being played in Atlanta. It's being played in the Meadowlands. It's being played everywhere. But that's not even why it's important. I mean, yes, I would love to have a grand showing in the biggest tournament across two continents, for sure. But it's more important because next stop, World Cup, which is 2 years away. And if there is one thing my time in Greenville has shown me as we approach 4.5 years here, it's that time flies and we're all dying, all right? So you only got a little bit left.
Wow.
What do you want?
Time flies and we're all dying.
I got here yesterday. It has now been 4 years. I got here as a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed 35-year-old. I am now on the brink of 40, all right? We're all dying. It's existential dread for everybody. You get some existential dread. You get some existential dread. Everybody gets some existential dread, huh? I think it is important.
Not me. I'm not doing it.
It is hard to be existential when you got Rebecca Black.
You are
on
trying
the speakers,
to ruin
right?
people's weekends. People are looking outside and going, I don't know, and I feel this way too. I don't know why, but it's almost a weekend. It wasn't particularly a bad week. I'm looking forward to the fact that today is Friday.
Can I be straight up? The existential dread is not to make you feel bad. It's quite the opposite. It is meant to make you realize that your time is limited. Make the most of it. Go out, live your damn life. All right. I see too many people who do nothing. They sit around and do nothing all weekend, and then I'm like, what did you do? You only got like so many weekends left, and then you're dead. Why would you waste one of them just sitting around doing nothing? Go live, baby.
Stop that.
I mean, the truth hurts.
That's a dead thing? I mean,
but listen,
come on.
Every weekend you spend is one less weekend before the grave, all right? So don't waste them. Get out there. Go do the thing. Go hang glide. Go parasail. Go jump out of an airplane. Go do the thing.
What if you die during the week?
Then you're out of weekends.
Okay.
Right? So if you make it to this weekend, recognize it's not guaranteed not to be your last one. Go do the thing. Go do something ridiculous with your life. Anyway, the Americans, speaking of the weekend, play their first game in Copa America coming up on Sunday, 6 p.m. They will take on Bolivia. This tournament to me is all about, exclusively about finding the nine, finding the guy, finding the goal scorer, finding the difference maker. I mean, we know who they are up front, McKinney, Pulisic, Weah, etc. We got the guys. The question is, which one of them is going to be the guy that has two more years, starting with this, which is, honestly, our last, we'll have another Gold Cup, but our last highest quality tournament. We got all the South American teams here to challenge us, right? This one is about finding, under the brightest lights, who's going to be the guy that breaks out at the nine? Who's going to be the seven in the midfield that's helping them out? Who's going to be the guy in the midfield that understands how to create for the nine and distribute to the nine? And who's going to be the nine that you go, that's the guy. We need a goal. That's our Messi. That's our Ronaldo. That's our guy. That's our goal scorer. That's the one who's going to break games open for us. We need to find out in this tournament. We'll talk about this later on in the show because I've got some sound from Herc Gomez. I've got some sound from Jurgen Klinsmann, and they all agree with me. So we'll talk about that coming up later on in the show. And while I understand that's two items, it is because item number three, I'm going to make a segment out of. And I'm going to make a segment out of it when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Last night, went out, did our wedding planning stuff, came home, turned on the television, rewinded two, and then watched from the beginning the Major League Baseball game that took place at historic Rickwood Field in Birmingham, Alabama. A few months ago when they announced this game, I genuinely thought about going. I thought about taking yesterday and today off and going to this game. Ultimately elected not to, saving up vacation for later in the year, obviously. And about 7 minutes into the broadcast, I was like, damn, I should have gone. Last night, they celebrated the Negro Leagues at Rickwood Field, the oldest Major League Baseball park in America. And it was incredible. It was incredible. It was a celebration of, pardon me, a major part of Major League Baseball's history. And again, it is a very interesting part of Major League Baseball, because on one hand, we got to be honest about it. It was a shameful part of Major League Baseball's history. The fact that for years, a large gathering of exceptional athletes were just prohibited from playing the game that they were very good at because of their skin color. Yeah, that's shameful. There's no other way to paint it. On the flip side, it created this league, the Negro League, that has this very rich history to it, and a history that is wildly important to the game. And I think that has been largely ignored by a huge swath of baseball. I just think it is a huge part of a massive part of baseball history that we just kind of ignored. I told the story earlier in the week after the passing of Willie Mays that when I was growing up, I had heard the name Willie Mays mentioned many, many times and mentioned amongst the greats, Johnny Bench, Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you know, I, like everybody else, knew about Jackie Robinson and the color barrier, and I knew of the existence of the Negro League, but I honestly spent a large part of my youth genuinely not knowing that Willie Mays was a black guy. Didn't know it. And then when I got to be 8 or 9 years old, my grandpa told me about it, introduced me to it. I started learning about the Negro League. And that is why a couple of weeks ago when Major League Baseball announced that they were going to be placing the Negro League record books into the official Major League record books, I was very excited about it. And even after having spent years of my life loving baseball and learning about the Negro League, it is one of the things I've enjoyed. I have enjoyed greatly learning about the Mill Leagues and the Negro Leagues here in South Carolina, in the history of baseball in the Carolinas, because it's a rich portion of baseball's history. You know, obviously, the minute I got here, one of the first things I learned about was that this is the home of Shoeless Joe Jackson. Right? And learned about that history. But then I learned about the Mill Leagues, and I learned about the Spinners, and I learned about all these different rich parts of baseball's history here in the Carolinas that then helped shape the baseball game that we know and we love today. So this celebration was beyond incredible. And as I watched this game, and throughout the night, they had a cat on last night by the name of Bob Hendrick. He is the president of the Negro League Baseball Museum, which is in Kansas City, Missouri. There is a Southern Negro League Museum in Birmingham, right across the street from Rickwood Field. But this guy was telling incredible stories. And one of the things that I learned that it blew my mind, and I loved it. He was telling the story about Satchel Paige, who was a black pitcher. I think Satchel Paige is on that list of Negro League players who went on into Major League Baseball and were so good that we know about them today. He was telling the story about Satchel Paige, who was as good of a baseball player as he was a showman and as good of a showman as he was a baseball player. And Hendrick told the story about the Negro League Museum, and they have a mock-up baseball field where at every position they have a statue of one of the best black players that played at that position in the Negro League. And on the mound, they have Satchel Paige. And so he told the story that Satchel Paige had names for all of his pitches. He didn't have a fastball. He had a long tom. He didn't have a curveball. He had loopers, right? And he told the story about how he had a long tom. He had a blooper, a looper, a drooper, a jump ball, a b-ball, a screwball, a wobbly ball, a whipsy dipsy do, a hurry-up ball, a nothing ball, and a bat dodger. And he said, I love to tell the story about Satchel Paige and what he had. He had a pitch called the b-ball. And he said, I love to ask the folks that come take a tour of the museum, do you know why they call it the b-ball? And he said, he told this story. I tried to find the audio from it. I was going to play it for you. I couldn't, so I'll just tell you what it is. It's worth going back. If you missed the game last night, it's worth going back and rewatching the tribute they did to Willie Mays, the tribute they did to the Negro League. It was exceptional. So he said, I told this crowd, do you know why Satchel Paige called it the b-ball? And he said there was an 8-year-old white kid who raised his hand and said, I do. He said, do you tell the folks? And he said, it's a b-ball. Because when he throw it, it'd be right where he wants it to be, which is incredible, right? That's incredible. And so he said it was an 8-year-old white kid who knew this. You know why he knew it? Because last year they decided to include Negro League players in MLB The Show, the video game. They decided to include these players in the game. And so kids playing The Show can now play as and learn about these Negro League players. And he said that's where this kid learned it. And he said the longer he's doing this, and the longer he's running this museum, and the longer he's telling the stories of these exceptional Negro League players, the more he's finding that people of all walks of life are learning about them and recognizing them. So now all of a sudden, when the record book changes and a name like Josh Harris is now your single season batting average champ, it's no longer a who. It's okay. That was a great player. What was it? That was an all-timer. It's one of the goats at his and any position, right? So I thought the tribute last night was exceptional. As I got to the end of it, a little bit behind where it was live on television, I got the text in a buddy of mine. And I said, these are the reasons that no matter how much controversy there is, no matter how frustrated I am with the game, this is why I genuinely feel that no matter what happens, baseball will always be the sport that I feel the most romantic about. And I think it is the sport that America, even if the number of people is shrinking to some degree, I think this is the sport that will always be the most romantic to Americans. This will always be our sport. This will always be the sport that when you think of American sports, baseball jumps to the top of the list. Yes, football's more popular. I'm not arguing it's not. The NBA may be more popular than Major League Baseball now. I'm not saying it's not. I don't know. What I'm saying is, I think the passion for baseball, and this is 100% anecdotal, I have no empirical evidence to back it up, but I think the people who are romantic about baseball will always have a deeper passion for baseball than fans of any other sport. And it was last night put that on full display. There was just something about it that I sat up way later than I should have last night because I couldn't stop watching. I couldn't stop listening to the stories. I think that's one of baseball's strong points. This is why I've said for a very long time, baseball would be served, as would a lot of other sports. To push the teams, but to make sure that you are always presenting new, young, followable baseball stars to the country, right? You should always be putting the next star up on the pedestal and doing a better job of it. Because I do think that is one of the weaknesses of baseball. Because we love individuals. We love stories. We love drama. We love stories. You don't think next year when it comes back, the second comeback of Ronald Acuna Jr. isn't going to be a story that nationally baseball fans are following? Of course it is. Aaron Judge in the home run chase this year is a story that we are going to follow. So watching last night as they were telling the stories of these great Negro League players and of the Negro League teams and of all the things that happened during a period in baseball where a group of people were told, you are not allowed to play on the biggest stage in the country because of your skin color. And they went, fine by us, we'll put on our own show. And not only did so in a league that is widely considered by baseball historians to have been better than Major League Baseball in terms of performance and athletes. To watch those stories get told on a national scale, man, the lady went to bed, I moved back to the bro cave, I sat back in the game chair, the phone didn't get picked up, the Xbox didn't get turned on, I just sat and relaxed and enjoyed an incredible and romantic evening of baseball. If you missed it, go back and check it out. It was unbelievable. Got a lot more wrapping up the 7 o'clock hour when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. The college football playoffs have expanded to 12 teams starting this upcoming college football season. We are, 75 days away, 74 days away, whatever, just a little over 10 weeks away from the start of the college football season. A day which will arrive with great fanfare, as always. There is an article up by one of our favorite sports writers, Heather Denich. Poof. That is up on ESPN right now. Heather, there it is. Love Heather. Love Heather. Heather's good at her job. All right, that's all I ask out of sports journalists. Be good at your job, please and thank you. Heather's good at her job. So, Heather has an article up right now entitled, Five Questions for the Committee. And I think they're fair. So what I'd like to do is take a look up and down these five questions and give our answers for them. Myself, the great Milanzo, and you. By jumping on the Renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas fan phone at 844-326-3663. Or by texting the show at 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, FAN, F-A-N, and we'll read them on the air. Be a part of the radio program. Question number one for the College Football Playoff Committee from Heather Denich. Will strength of schedule evaluations change with conference realignment? Heather Denich says, losing isn't something the top national title contenders are used to, but even some coaches expect that to change, and it could make things tricky in the committee meeting room. The committee has historically rewarded teams that play tougher opponents, holding wins against college football playoff top 25 teams in high regard. With the Big Ten expanding to 18 teams and the SEC to 16, though, some CFP contenders now have a more difficult path to their own conference championship game. The rigorous SEC and Big Ten schedules are going to make it even more difficult for those respective leagues to produce undefeated or even one loss conference champions. Denich points out that according to ESPN stats and information, since 2014, 14 of the 20 teams that participated in the SEC championship game had one or no losses. During that same time, 11 of 20 Big Ten teams playing in the league championship had one or no losses. But they expect now, according to ESPN's preseason FPI, only three teams have at least a 10% chance to finish the regular season undefeated. Those three teams are Oregon, Notre Dame, and Georgia. No teams have more than a 20% chance to go 12-0. The only other time during the CFP era that no teams had more than a 20% chance to finish undefeated was 2016, and Alabama was the only Power 5 team that did finish 12-0 that year. This is why I have said the controversy isn't going away. It's just moving further down the line, right? We know our top four teams are in, right? There's going to be no controversy. The top four conference champs are in. Three power conference champs, and then what is it? Fourth highest rated champ to make sure we get a group team in. But outside of that, the rest is going to be a lot of arguing in a back room of a hotel by some suits. And we're going to know who the probably best, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 teams in the country are. But teams 10, 11, and 12, we're going to have arguments about. The best thing in the world for me, the best thing that could happen in year one of this tournament, great one, would be is if an 11 or a 12 seed wins the Natty right out of the gate, right? And it's absolutely possible. Ohio State could come into the playoffs as an 11 seed and run the table through the playoffs and win the Natty.
Don't say that, but you're right, they could.
Absolutely they could. And if they could do that, then all of a sudden, all of that controversy that we have dealt with in years gone by regarding who's number four, FSU or Alabama, right? All of those types of controversies are still going to exist. They're going to exist for spots 11 and 12, 13 and 14. Who should get in? So is the evaluation of conference schedule going to change, or of schedule, strength of schedule going to change? Yeah, it absolutely is. What's going to be interesting is the way that it changes, right? Because if you already think, as I do, that you get bonus points just for existing in the SEC or the Big Ten, yeah, that's about to get worse. That's about to get worse. However, it is also now empirically going to be more difficult for teams to get in. It just is. So that is absolutely going to be a problem. Question number two from Heather Dinich. How many teams from the SEC and Big Ten will fill the bracket? She said, using last year's final CFP rankings with conference realignment for 2024, the Big Ten and the SEC would have combined for 10 of the 12 playoff spots. She points out that, according to last year's rankings, SEC champ Alabama would have been in, along with Texas, Georgia, Mizzou, and Ole Miss. Big Ten champion Michigan would have been joined by Washington, Pac-12 champ last year, Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State. One of the things that is interesting and that I do think is going to be discussed at length in the future is the fact that there is no rule as to how many teams from one conference can qualify for the playoff, but there are guaranteed spots for the five highest ranked conference champions. Most likely, those will feature the champs from the ACC, Big Ten, SEC, Geico 12, and a group of five winner. In 2023, those winners were FSU, Michigan, Alabama, and Texas, and Liberty out of Conference USA. So Heather asked the question, how often will the conference champs from the ACC and the Big 12 be their lone representative? And I can tell you now, the answer is right out the damn gate, all right? It's going to be tough. Now, there is absolutely going to be some truth to the belief that those are just the best conferences. That's why they're gobbling up the best teams and making the most money. So, yes, there is sort of some justification for it. But every time that you say the only rep from the ACC will be the ACC champ, let's say the last 2 years, right? FSU goes in. Now, last year is kind of a tough argument, because you didn't really have another team that you looked at and you circled and you went, this team could have done it. But we have had a lot of years where you go, Clemson was the champ, But FSU was 10-2, and the only two losses were Clemson in the regular season and Clemson in the postseason in the ACC title game. They would absolutely be one of the best two or three teams in fill in the other conference of comparison
this
here.
This is another reason why getting rid of the divisions within like the SEC and all that, this takes care of a problem. Because the number two team in the conference sometimes has more losses than the actual than another team. Like in the Big Ten, a lot of times the other side, if it's not Ohio State or Michigan playing in that championship game, the team on the other side sometimes has three losses.
Sure.
And so eliminating the SEC East versus SEC West, then you don't have to worry about that anymore. Then it's the top two teams. But as far as ACC goes, and did you say Big 12?
Geico 12.
Yeah.
Allstate 12. Best Buy 12.
QT 12.
Walmart 12.
The QT 12 is, they're not that good. I mean, they're not that deep compared to the other conferences. So it just makes sense. It's about best team, not about anything else.
No, but right? Here's the thing. I don't think anybody's ever had that argument. I think the argument has always been, and this kind of circles back around to question number one, how do you prove the best team if they don't all play each other? How do you prove the best team? How do you prove that the second place team in the ACC that has only two losses to the ACC champ once in the regular season and to the ACC champ in the postseason, how do you prove that that team with two losses wouldn't have run undefeated through the Geico 12?
It's going to be combined eye tests, not just one guy deciding, but the committee going, according to our collective eye test, that team, the second team in the AC, is not any better than the fourth team in the SEC.
Sure. But this harkens back to, and I'm not taking a stance on this in terms of real situations, but it does harken back to the people who believe, and I am one of these people, the people who believe FSU didn't get the shaft last year because Jordan Travis's knee exploded. They got the shaft because you can't have a playoff without the SEC, right? So we're going to give them a little weight. Because we need them in there. That controversy, if we go next year and let's say that happens, the Big Ten and the SEC combine for 10 out of 12 spots, and the only two other spots are handed off to the ACC and the Geico 12, the Best Buy 12 champ. If that turns out to be the case, all those people who are already upset about what happened last year, and there are a lot, even if there's not a lot in this area, nationally there are. If those people are upset now, imagine what happens next year when 10 of 12 spots are filled by two conferences and it's the two money-making conferences.
Yeah, but again, I'm not going to have a problem with it because I'm not going to go, oh, this is all about money. I'm going to look at it and go, those teams are better than these teams.
I mean, you might. But again, the question is—
Unless they aren't.
So hypothetically next year, Michigan and Ohio State— and I know this is not going to be in the same case now that divisions are going away. But let's say this situation happened last year. I guess, actually, I'm not, because it doesn't matter. It's not relevant. I was going to say, what if Michigan and Ohio State play, and Michigan wins, and they go to the Big Ten champ, and then they lose to a 9-3 Penn State team? Penn State goes as the Big Ten champ. Then Michigan's got to go. They're 12-1. Then Ohio State's got to go, because they're 11-1, right? So there's three spots right there. Because of a round robin of three teams, and I can go, wait a minute, prove to me that the second best team in the ACC would have been able to beat Penn State or Michigan or Ohio State. You can't, right? So they should get a shot because they made it to a conference championship game, Ohio State. The controversy is not going away. It's just moving further on down the line. Let's see. Another question from Heather Dinich. Is how difficult will it be to rank the number 8 and 9 teams with the number 1 team looming? The four highest ranked conference champs will earn a first round bye. Everyone else will play a first round game on the home campus of the higher seed. The winner of the game between the 8 and the 9 will face the best team in the country in the quarterfinal. The loser goes home. Heather asked the question, is this something the committee will think about either consciously or unconsciously as it compiles its final rankings on Selection Day? Remember, these games will be played on December 20th and 21st, which could be very cold on some campuses, particularly the Big Ten. How much of an advantage might that be if they are hosting a team, say, from the South? She says last year in a 12-team field, Oregon would have hosted Mizzou. Autzen Stadium has a distinct home field advantage because of its smaller size and location. The winner of that game would have played number 1 in Big Ten champ Michigan. And again, it's a fair question. because I've got to ask you, how do you differentiate specifically with 8-9, but also true of 7-10, also true of 6-12? How do you differentiate between 8-9, especially if, let's say it's 8 Penn State and 9 Texas A&M? You got Texas A&M, which in December is 72 and nice outside, and Penn State, which on December 20th is going to be bleep you, your fingers are going to fall off cold. That's a huge advantage to one team over the other. How are you going to differentiate 8-9, or is it just going to be another few years of the same crap? The same crap, just as I said, move further down the rankings.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, it is.
It for sure. I mean, when they went to 12, you know, 10, 11, 12 is going to be an argument. It just is.
It is. And I think the reason that, even if you feel like that is the case, and I do, even if you feel like that is the case, and I think these are good questions, all of which are going to be answered with the whole concept of life's not fair. Yeah. I think the acceptance that we have here is, well, at least we think, by and large, more often than not, the teams that get in it at 9, 10, 11, 12, likely or not, usually are not teams we think would win a natty. Doesn't mean they won't in this circumstance. That's why we do a tournament. But in years gone by, we've never cared about teams 9, 10, 11, and 12 because they're not natty contenders. Teams that are 4, 5, maybe 6 are. And I do think that is why we're
still
kicking
matter,
the...
Is it still going to matter, though? I mean, the teams that are 9 through 12, chances are they're not going to win. But I think the majority of people are probably just going, hey, we get more football, meaningful football, not the bowl games that don't mean anything.
And
but
another
stuff
round
that
of,
means something.
Another round of college football on college campi, right?
Yes.
One more. Because if you don't think if Penn State's hosting a playoff game that Happy Valley's not going to be the most electrifying place at all during college football season, I don't know what to tell you. You know, if you know, FSU gets in as the 5 seed next year like they did this year, Tallahassee, Florida on December 20th is going to be a zoo. If Clemson gets in as the 7 seed and they're hosting the 10 seed, you don't think Death Valley is going to be absolutely pumping on December 21st? Hell yeah, it is. It'll be the most hyped game of the year. So we're all on board for that. But for me, I still want to find the best, most fair, and most accurate way to determine a champ. And while I do think 12 teams is better than 4, the point is the only reason it's better than 4 is because the controversy's not going anywhere. It's just that we are pushing it down toward teams that are dramatically less likely to win a natty in the long run. And I think that's what kind of settles us all down a little bit. Your thoughts are welcome. 71307 is the text line. 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N. We'll read them on the air. You can call us on the renewal by Anderson to the Carolinas fan phone at 844-326-3663. That is the phone number. If you ever called a phone number to hear Lonzo read a sports flash, we'd have to charge you $9.99 a minute for it.
So seductive. And might have to charge extra. If the AL East does indeed come down to Baltimore and New York, Yankees fans might be concerned after yesterday's 17-5 route. 17-5, that's a lot. Route by the Orioles. Baltimore scored in every inning except the fourth, including a sixth spot in the second. Lewis Gills, I know that's not how you say it, but I'm going to do it anyway. Cy Young campaign took a bump after giving up 8 hits and 7 earned runs in just 1.1 innings, and Baltimore recorded 19 hits in the contest. J.J. Redick will be the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, agreeing to a 4-year contract. Financial terms of the agreement were not disclosed. Redick played 15 years in the league and has been working as an analyst for ESPN since his retirement. Hey, tune in this afternoon from 3 to 7 p.m. for a brand new spanking show, local show. It's spanking new night. It's wire to wire. Cole Bryson and Diesel get you up to date on all the latest stories, wire to wire.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
The college football playoffs have expanded to 12 teams starting this upcoming college football season. We are, what, 75 days away, 74 days away, whatever, just a little over 10 weeks away from the start of the college football season. A day which will arrive with great fanfare, as always. There is an article up by one of our favorite sports writers, Heather Denich, poof, that is up on ESPN right now. Heather, there it is. Love Heather. Love Heather. Heather's good at her job. All right, that's all I ask out of sports journalists. Be good at your job, please and thank you. Heather's good at her job. So, Heather has an article up right now entitled, Five Questions for the Committee. And I think they are... I think they're fair. So what I'd like to do is take a look up and down these five questions and give our answers for them. Myself, the great Milanzo, and you by jumping on the Renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas fan phone at 844-326-3663 or by texting the show at 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, FAN, F-A-N, and we'll read them on the air. Be a part of the radio program. Question number one. For the College Football Playoff Committee from Heather Denich. Will strength of schedule evaluations change with conference realignment? Heather Denich says, losing isn't something the top national title contenders are used to, but even some coaches expect that to change, and it could make things tricky in the committee meeting room. The committee has historically rewarded teams that play tougher opponents, holding wins against College Football Playoff top 25 teams in high regard. With the Big Ten expanding to 18 teams and the SEC to 16, though, some CFP contenders now have a more difficult path to their own conference championship game. The rigorous SEC and Big Ten schedules are going to make it even more difficult for those respective leagues to produce undefeated or even one loss conference champions. Denich points out that according to ESPN stats and information, since 2014, 14 of the 20 teams that participated in the SEC championship game had one or no losses. During that same time, 11 of 20 Big Ten teams playing in the league championship had one or no losses. But they expect now, according to ESPN's preseason FPI, only three teams have at least a 10% chance to finish the regular season undefeated. Those three teams are Oregon, Notre Dame, and Georgia. No teams have more than a 20% chance to go 12-0. The only other time during the CFP era that no teams had more than a 20% chance to finish undefeated was 2016, and Alabama was the only Power 5 team that did finish 12-0 that year. This is why I have said the controversy isn't going away. It's just moving further down the line, right? We know our top four teams are in, right? There's going to be no controversy. The top four conference champs are in. Three power conference champs and then, what is it, fourth highest rated champ to make sure we get a group team in. But outside of that, the rest is going to be a lot of arguing in a back room of a hotel by some suits. And we're going to know who the probably best, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 teams in the country are. But teams 10, 11, and 12, we're going to have arguments about. The best thing in the world for me, the best thing that could happen in year one of this tournament, great one, would be is if an 11 or a 12 seed wins the Natty right out of the gate, right? And it's absolutely possible. Ohio State could come into the playoffs as an 11th seed and run the table through the playoffs and win the Natty.
Don't say that, but you're right, they could.
Absolutely they could. And if they could do that, then all of a sudden, all of that controversy that we have dealt with in years gone by regarding who's number four, FSU or Alabama, right? All of those types of controversies are still going to exist. They're going to exist for spots 11 and 12, 13 and 14. Who should get in? So is the evaluation of conference schedule going to change, or of schedule, strength of schedule going to change? Yeah, it absolutely is. What's going to be interesting is the way that it changes, right? Because if you already think, as I do, that you get bonus points just for existing in the SEC or the Big Ten, yeah, that's about to get worse. That's about to get worse. However, it is also now empirically going to be more difficult for teams to get in. It just is. So that is absolutely going to be a problem. Question number two from Heather Dinich. How many teams from the SEC and Big Ten will fill the bracket? She said, using last year's final CFP rankings with conference realignment for 2024, the Big Ten and the SEC would have combined for 10 of the 12 playoff spots. She points out that, according to last year's rankings, SEC champ Alabama would have been in, along with Texas, Georgia, Mizzou, and Ole Miss. Big Ten champion Michigan would have been joined by Washington, Pac-12 champ last year, Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State. One of the things that is interesting and that I do think is going to be discussed at length in the future is the fact that there is no rule as to how many teams from one conference can qualify for the playoff, but there are guaranteed spots for the five highest-ranked conference champions. Most likely, those will feature the champs from the ACC, Big Ten, SEC, Geico 12, and a Group of Five winner. In 2023, those winners were FSU, Michigan, Alabama, and Texas, and Liberty out of Conference USA. So Heather asked the question, how often will the conference champs from the ACC and the Big 12 be their lone representative? And I can tell you now, the answer is right out the damn gate, all right? It's going to be tough. Now, there is absolutely going to be some truth to the belief that those are just the best conferences. That's why they're gobbling up the best teams and making the most money. So, yes, there is sort of some justification for it. But every time that you say the only rep from the ACC will be the ACC champ, let's say the last 2 years, right? FSU goes in. Now, last year is kind of a tough argument because you didn't really have another team that you looked at and you circled and you went, this team could have done it. But we have had a lot of years where you go, Clemson was the champ, but FSU was 10-2, and the only two losses were Clemson in the regular season and Clemson in the postseason in the ACC title game. They would absolutely be one of the best two or three teams in filling the other conference of comparison
this
here.
This is another reason why getting rid of the divisions within, like the SEC and all that, this takes care of a problem. Because the number two team in the conference sometimes has more losses than the actual than another team. Like in the Big Ten, a lot of times the other side, if it's not Ohio State or Michigan playing in that championship game, the team on the other side sometimes has three losses.
Sure.
And so eliminating the SEC East versus SEC West, then you don't have to worry about that anymore. Then it's the top two teams. But as far as ACC goes, and did you say Big 12?
Geico 12.
Yeah.
Allstate 12. Best Buy 12.
QT 12.
Walmart 12.
The QT 12 is, they're not that good. I mean, they're not that deep compared to the other conferences. So it just makes sense. It's about best team, not about anything else.
No, but
right?
I, here's the thing. I don't think anybody's ever had that argument. I think the argument has always been, and this kind of circles back around to question number one, how do you prove the best team if they don't all play each other? How do you prove the best team? How do you prove that the second place team in the ACC that has only two losses to the ACC champ once in the regular season and to the ACC champ in the postseason. How do you prove that that team with two losses wouldn't have run undefeated through the Geico 12?
It's going to be combined eye tests, not just one guy deciding, but the committee going, you know, according to our collective eye test, that team, the second team in the ACC, is not any better than the fourth team in the SEC.
Sure. But this harkens back to, and I'm not taking a stance on this in terms of real situations, but it does harken back to the people who believe, and I am one of these people, the people who believe FSU didn't get the shaft last year because Jordan Travis's knee exploded. They got the shaft because you can't have a playoff without the SEC, right? So we're going to give them a little weight because we need them in there. That controversy, if we go next year and let's say that happens, the Big Ten and the SEC combined for 10 out of 12 spots, and the only two other spots are handed off to the ACC and the Geico 12, the Best Buy 12 champ. If that turns out to be the case, all those people who are already upset about what happened last year, and there are a lot, even if there's not a lot in this area, nationally there are, if those people are upset now, imagine what happens next year when 10 of 12 spots are filled by two conferences and it's the two money-making conferences.
Yeah, but again, I'm not going to have a problem with it because I'm not going to go, oh, this is all about money. I'm going to look at it and go, those teams are better than these teams.
I mean, you might. But again, the question is...
Unless they aren't.
So hypothetically next year, Michigan and Ohio State... And I know this is not going to be in the same case now that divisions are going away. But let's say this situation happened last year. I guess, actually, I'm not, because it doesn't matter. It's not relevant. I was going to say, what if Michigan and Ohio State play and Michigan wins and they go to the Big Ten champ and then they lose to a 9-3 Penn State team? Penn State goes as the Big Ten champ. Then Michigan's got to go. They're 12-1. Then Ohio State's got to go because they're 11-1, right? So there's three spots right there. Because of a round robin of three teams, and I can go, wait a minute, prove to me that the second best team in the ACC would have been able to beat Penn State or Michigan or Ohio State. You can't, right? So they should get a shot because they made it to a conference championship game, Ohio State. The controversy is not going away. It's just moving further on down the line. Let's see. Another question from Heather Dinich. Is how difficult will it be to rank the number 8 and 9 teams with the number 1 team looming? The four highest ranked conference champs will earn a first round bye. Everyone else will play a first round game on the home campus of the higher seed. The winner of the game between the 8 and the 9 will face the best team in the country in the quarterfinal. The loser goes home. Heather asked the question, is this something the committee will think about either consciously or unconsciously as it compiles its final rankings on Selection Day? Remember, these games will be played on December 20th and 21st, which could be very cold on some campuses, particularly the Big Ten. How much of an advantage might that be if they are hosting a team, say, from the South? She says last year in a 12-team field, Oregon would have hosted Mizzou. Autzen Stadium has a distinct home field advantage because of its smaller size and location. The winner of that game would have played number 1 and Big Ten champ Michigan. And again, it's a fair question because I've got to ask you, how do you differentiate specifically with 8-9, but also true of 7-10, also true of 6-12? How do you differentiate between 8 and 9, especially if, let's say, it's 8 Penn State and 9 Texas A&M? You got Texas A&M, which in December is 72 and nice outside, and Penn State, which on December 20th is going to be bleep you, your fingers are going to fall off cold. That's a huge advantage to one team over the other. How are you going to differentiate 8 to 9, or is it just going to be another few years of the same crap? The same crap, just as I said, move further down the rankings.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, it is.
It for sure. I mean, when they went to 12, you know, 10, 11, 12 is going to be an argument. It just is.
It is. And I think the reason that, even if you feel like that is the case, and I do, even if you feel like that is the case, and I think these are good questions, all of which are going to be answered with the whole concept of life's not fair. Yeah. I think the acceptance that we have here is, well, at least we think, by and large, more often than not, the teams that get in at 9, 10, 11, 12 likely or not, usually are not teams we think would win a natty. Doesn't mean they won't in this circumstance. That's why we do a tournament. But in years gone by, we've never cared about teams 9, 10, 11, and 12 because they're not natty contenders. Teams that are 4, 5, maybe 6 are. And I do think that is why we're
still
kicking
matter,
the...
Is it still going to matter, though? I mean, the teams that are 9 through 12, chances are they're not going to win. But I think the majority of people are probably just going, hey, we get more football, meaningful football, not the bowl games that don't mean anything.
And another round of college football on college campi, right?
Yes.
One more. Because if you don't think if Penn State's hosting a playoff game that Happy Valley's not going to be the most electrifying place at all during college football season, I don't know what to tell you. You know, if you know, FSU gets in as the 5 seed next year like they did this year, Tallahassee, Florida on December 20th is going to be a zoo. If Clemson gets in as the 7 seed and they're hosting the 10 seed, you don't think Death Valley is going to be absolutely pumping on December 21st? Hell yeah, it is. It'll be the most hyped game of the year. So we're all on board for that. But for me, I still want to find the best, most fair, and most accurate way to determine a champ. And while I do think 12 teams is better than 4, the point is the only reason it's better than 4 is because the controversy's not going anywhere. It's just that we are pushing it down toward teams that are dramatically less likely to win a natty in the long run. And I think that's what kind of settles us all down a little bit. Your thoughts are welcome. 71307 is the text line. 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N. We'll read them on the air. You can call us on the renewal by Anderson to the Carolinas fan phone at 844-326-3663. That is the phone number. If you ever called a phone number to hear Lonzo read a sports flash, we'd have to charge you $9.99 a minute for it.
So seductive. And might have to charge extra. If the AL East does indeed come down to Baltimore and New York, Yankees fans might be concerned after yesterday's 17-5, that's a lot, route by the Orioles. Baltimore scored in every inning except the fourth, including a sixth spot in the second. Lewis Gills, I know that's not how you say it, but I'm going to do it anyway. Cy Young campaign took a bump after giving up 8 hits and 7 earned runs in just 1.1 innings, and Baltimore recorded 19 hits in the contest. J.J. Redick will be the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, agreeing to a 4-year contract. Financial terms of the agreement were not disclosed. Redick played 15 years in the league and has been working as an analyst for ESPN since his retirement. Hey, tune in this afternoon from 3 to 7 p.m. for a brand new spanking show, local show. It's spanking new night. It's wire to wire. Cole Bryson and Deese will get you up to date on all the latest stories, wire to wire.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.